We are still going through the Gospel of Mark. However, I occasionally have things that are on my heart that I just have to preach. And so I'm going to move from that for today. And I confessed it in Sunday school. I'll confess it again. It's about me. You know, I bring to you what God shows me. And sometimes God shows me something so compelling that I just have to preach it. So that's what we're going to do today. I want to talk with you today on the subject of worry. We know we're not supposed to do that. God has commanded us not to worry. Be anxious for nothing, Scripture says. We know that it's counterproductive to worry. This is what we tell ourselves when we're worrying. This isn't helping. Stop it. We know that. It doesn't help. It even hurts. Makes a bad situation worse. And if you're really a good worrier, you can make a great situation horrible just by worrying about it. We know as Christians that it's sinful disobedience. We know that it's harmful to us, that it's counterproductive. We know it's going to make us more frustrated. But it's not easy to stop, is it? Makes us even more upset when we find ourselves caught in this cycle of worry and we're telling ourselves we shouldn't be doing that, and then that bothers us too. And we're worried about the fact that we worry so much, and we're bothered by the fact that it's sin and we want to stop and we still don't stop. And it can work a lot of ways. You may encounter a circumstance that is unsettling, and you begin to play out the scenarios in your mind. What if this happens? And what if this happens? And what if it goes this way? Sometimes it just takes a close call. What if that had happened? And then you go with it. You know, well, it could, you know, what if this does happen next time? And we even do it during the best of times, especially when it's really good, because then we start to think, well, what if it doesn't last? What if something happens? And we begin to imagine in any of those circumstances what life would be like if something doesn't go well, either because it seems like it won't or we wish that it wouldn't, but it might somehow. And what if the future holds this? What if that person does this thing that I think he might? What if he won't respond like I had hoped? What if there's not enough money? What if something happens? It's a negative fantasy life, this thing we call worry. It's negative fantasizing about the future and about the potential actions of other people. It is an imaginary scene that plays in our minds and compels us to feel horrible. And for the Christian, the guilt that comes with the worrying adds to the effect. Now I'm worried and I feel guilty. We remember Jesus' command not to be anxious about anything. It's convicting, but that in itself does not make us change. And so many people go on for long periods of time trapped in this negative fantasy world, feeling guilty and being guilty, but not knowing what to do to change the pattern. Now, if you are a believer in Jesus Christ, then you have the spiritual resources to have victory in this area of life. You can break the cycle. If you're a Christian. If you're not a Christian, we'll get to that later, but none of this is going to work for you until you become a believer. But if you're a Christian, you've got spiritual resources. But how do you break the cycle? How do you stop thinking about that stuff? Are there practical solutions to get you out of this trap that we call worry? Well, to answer that, I want to take you to Psalm 3, the third psalm in the in the book of Psalms. If you'll turn there, I'll give you a second to get there and we'll read it. Psalm number 3. Psalm 3, verse 1. O Lord, how my adversaries have increased. Many are rising up against me. Many are saying of my soul, there is no deliverance for him in God. But you, O Lord, are a shield about me, my glory and the one who lifts my head. I was crying to the Lord with my voice, and he answered me from his holy mountain. I lay down and slept. I awoke, for the Lord sustains me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people who have set themselves against me round about. Arise, O Lord. Save me, O my God. For you have smitten all my enemies on the cheek. You have shattered the teeth of the wicked. Salvation belongs to the Lord. Your blessing be upon your people. Now this psalm is an expression of tremendous confidence in God. And although it doesn't mention the word worry, it holds for us some keys for overcoming this cycle of worry. But before we get into the answers, I think it's important to note some things that are not in this psalm and that will never help you overcome worry. They're not taught for a reason. They're not in the Bible for a reason. It's because they don't help. But because our minds go to them so easily, I want to point out a few things that are not the solution to worry. The first is this. The solution to worry is not in your circumstances. Now, this ought to be self-evident because people worry when things are good. They're worried that they won't stay good. So there's no amount of good that can overcome worry in this world. But there's something about how our minds work that makes us tend to think that we should look for a solution in our circumstances. If I had a better job, I wouldn't worry. If I felt better, I wouldn't worry. If this hadn't happened, then I wouldn't be worrying. If I could afford it. If so-and-so would change his ways. And we think that a change in our situation or someone else's situation is the solution. Well, the problem is that this cycle of worry does not originate out there in the circumstances. It doesn't originate out there in somebody else's life when they're treating you in a sinful way or that when you're afraid they might. The problem doesn't start out there. It starts in our hearts. And so nothing out there can fix it, and that includes the circumstances. Sinful worry is a heart issue. And it can only be addressed by each of us individually in our hearts. If good circumstances were the solution to worry, this psalm could not have been written. Look at the heading. Now, your translation may have a heading that's there to help you find what you're looking for. But part of this is in the original. It's the part that says, A Psalm of David, when he fled from Absalom, his son. And then verse 1 says, O Lord, how my adversaries have increased. Many are rising up against me. David was in the midst of the most horrible circumstances of his life. And with his life, that's saying something. One of his own sons had led a very effective coup and split the nation, but he had the stronger part, the son did. And now David was running from his palace, running from Jerusalem, running for his life with a much stronger force in pursuit. He's got enemies. And his enemies are increasing. His own son is leading them, and there are a lot of them. And now even those who are not actively against him are saying that he's not going to make it. Look at verse 2 again. Many are saying of my soul, there is no deliverance for him in God. The way people in our culture say that is, God can't even help him. And many people are saying this about David at this time in his life. The pep squad has given up on David. They're saying he doesn't have a chance, that God has even forsaken him. It's over for him. Now, your circumstances have to be pretty bad when you've had the popularity that David has had, and then you go out of Jerusalem running from your own son and his army, made up of your former loyal servants, and people are standing on the mountains shouting down curses at you as you go by, and people are saying, it's too late for him. God's not even going to help him now. Those are bad circumstances. But that's where David was when he wrote this psalm of tremendous confidence. Not a hint of worry anywhere in it. The turmoil that most of us struggle with so often in life is completely missing from what this man says. So the solution to worry is not getting your way. Because if it were, he would be worried. He doesn't have his way here. It lies somewhere else besides there. It's not your circumstances. And the solution to worrying is not in telling yourself not to worry. You tried this one? I shouldn't be worried about that. I've got to stop worrying about that. I can't. Stop it. What are you thinking about when you do that? It doesn't help, does it? This is where Christians get trapped. We know we're not supposed to worry. We know that it's sin. We want to obey. We feel genuine guilt over our attitude. We want to change. And then we constantly tell ourselves to stop. And it doesn't work. We don't have the firepower to convince ourselves that there's nothing to worry about. Christians attempt to command themselves to stop. They say it over and over and over again. And even though what they're saying is true, it doesn't help. Because self is the problem, not the solution. Telling yourself to do something isn't going to fix it. The problem is you can't convince yourself. You remain worried because you're going, no, this is pretty bad. You're just arguing with yourself. It is necessary to acknowledge worry for what it is. It's sin, and we need to know that we shouldn't do that. But that in itself is not enough to conquer the problem. It's just a step along the way. You face it for what it is, but then you got to do some things. So you acknowledge it, then you've got to move on to the rest of the solution. And it's not in the circumstances, and it's not in just telling yourself over and over and over again not to worry. And the solution to worry does not lie in teaming up on the problem. We talked in Sunday school about how important Christian fellowship is and about how much we need one another to encourage each other so we don't all fall down individually. And that is so true. But there are limits on what Christian fellowship can do. It does what God designed it to do. It does not do what God did not design it to do. And all your Christian friends can do is tell you and encourage you to do what you have to do on this one. They can't do it for you. Some people attempt to deal with worry by continually wearing their hearts on their sleeves. They pull their comfort out of other people, or try to. They want to feel better about whatever's bothering them by somebody else's power to pat them on the back and make them feel better, conquer their fears. And so they're always talking about their problems. And they're doing it in hopes that someone will argue with them and tell them it's not as bad as it seems and be able to convince them. That's not what God designed for you in conquering this. Nobody can fix it for you. They can encourage you to do what you must do, but that's all. And in David's case, there's just not a lot of encouragement around. He's got a few loyal people still with him. But if it depended on people, he's kind of got the cards stacked against him when he writes this psalm. The much larger army stayed. A lot of people are not fighting, but standing on the hillsides going, it's over for him. Can't look to people. They can't do it for you, and they can be fickle. So, if you want to conquer this cycle of worry, the solution is not in your circumstances, it is not in self-focus and self-talk, and it is not in having your Christian friends do it for you. And finally, the solution to worry is not worry. Sounds kind of obvious, but we try it. A lot of people think that if they just analyze the problem a little longer, they'll figure it out. And they'll get past the problem of worry. They're going to think their way through the challenge. They're going to think about the problem long enough until they figured it out, and then it's going to be over. They're going to learn something by analysis about the nature of people so that they can predict the future and know that it's going to come out okay, or whatever other uncontrollable thing assails them. And this approach really amounts to an attempt to exhaust this cycle of worry. I'm just going to worry until the worrying is all done, and then it'll be over. You're never going to get to the end of that road. And if you did, there wouldn't be a solution there. It's important to rule these things out because they're typical. They're typical attempts that Christians make to solve this problem. They don't work. They make the problem worse. They make you feel that guilt for more and more, longer and longer. So set those things aside. They're not the answer. They're not what Scripture teaches. But then what's left if it's not the circumstances, it's not other people, it's not self-talk, it's not teaming up on the problem, it's not thinking about it until you're done? Then what is it? What's the answer? What's left? You realize we've ruled out everything on this earth? What's left? The solution to worry lies in God Himself and in Him alone. And that's what this psalm is about. This psalm doesn't mention worry. What it mentions is the kind of circumstances that make most Christians mad with worry. And he's not worried. Why not? Why isn't he troubled in the way we become troubled? How did David get out of the reach of this cycle of worry? He's got plenty of problems, but he's not worried. Now, that's great for David. Question that ought to be ringing in our minds, though, is, okay, all right, it makes sense. It's not in this world. It's in God. That's the only solution. But how do I get there? How do I do what David did? If he could do it with an army coming after him, I could probably do it with the stuff I'm facing. But I don't know how. How do you get there? What did he do? Because it's not enough for me just to know this is wrong. That's not helping. I've known that for years. Let me give you four practical steps from this psalm. Four practical steps to conquering worry. Number one, run to God with your problems. Run to God with whatever it is that's eating at you, that's driving you into this cycle. Now, the psalms are interesting. They're not all the same by any means. And you got to ask, who's David talking to in this psalm? Sometimes he talks to himself. Why so downcast, O my soul? Put your hope in God. Sometimes he talks to the congregation. Praise ye the Lord, all ye peoples. This time he's talking to God. This psalm is a prayer. He's not talking to himself. He's not talking to other people. He's talking to God. And David is very forthright with about his problem as he goes to God. He's not pretending anything. He's not trying to be all holy and look like, you know, some people try to look in church. You know, we don't want anybody to see. So in Sunday school, I'm going to pray in a real holy kind of way. I mean, he is so real in the way he deals with God in this text. Look at verses 1 and 2 again. Oh, Lord, how my adversaries have increased. Many are rising up against me. Many are saying of my soul, there is no deliverance for him in God. And this is a prayer. Now, are you this honest and broken before God when you pray about what bothers you? Because this is what we have to do. This is the first step. Take those very issues that are driving you mad and get on your face before God and just dump the whole load right there and say what you mean. He can take it. Cry out to him. There's no accusation in this. There's no horrible attitude in this, but David's saying what's bothering him. Cry out to God with exactly what the problem is. Not accusing God of wrong, but just cry it out before him. David's own son is in rebellion against him. He's very little strength of his own on his own side in the coming battle. He's got to flee with a very small army. People are mocking him as he goes out. And he cries out to God. This is productive activity. This is not a weak faith. This does not mean that you're a poor Christian if you're willing to get on your face before God and tell him what he already knows is in your heart. This is an act of faith. And think of how specific he is. Put this in the kind of language that we would use. He's saying, oh God, look how many of them there are. I have more enemies than I've ever had. They're increasing. Oh, how they've increased. They're coming for me. Their one objective is to kill me. Many are rising up against me, David says. They're saying, this is the end for me, God. They're saying, you won't even help me now. Now, this is how you face what's eating you. It's an act of faith to take your troubles to God and to be very honest there before him, rather than to try and deal with it yourself by thinking about it more, rather than by taking it to all the friends you know and hope that they can overwhelm it. In faith, you take it to the only one who has power over life and death and over the future. You take it to God himself and you say, oh God, this looks bad. I'm scared. And God himself will comfort you. God himself will give you perspective because you've acted in faith to go to him. That's the first step. Run to God in prayer. But there are more steps. The second one, recount God's character. The solution's not in this world. The solution is only in him. You need to spend some time thinking about who he is. Recount his character to yourself. This is the kind of self-talk you need. Don't tell yourself to do better. Tell yourself who God is. You need to tell yourself who's on your side. You need to remind yourself of just who it is you worship. Of just who it is you've put your hope in. There's an army coming down on you. You don't need to tell yourself not to worry about it. It won't help. But when you tell yourself, God can handle the army, that helps. And that's what David does. Verse 3. Immediately after he's poured out his troubles, he says, but you, O God, are a shield about me. my glory and the one who lifts my head. Who takes care of you? Who can see you through whatever you're facing? Who has the power to do it? It's not yourself. It's not your friends. After you've poured out your trouble, you say, "But you, O God." Are a shield about me, my glory, and the one who lifts my head. Oh, friends, if you dwell on this God who is so big and so powerful that we'll never comprehend it, never get all of it. He's infinite, we're not, we'll never get there. We'll love trying for all of eternity, but we're never going to exhaust the greatness of God. You spend some time dwelling on Him. On the fact that He cares for you, armies will no longer seem so large. You'll get an attitude like David's got. They only have men. They only have weapons that can destroy flesh. They can't do anything to me after that. Jesus actually told you that. Don't fear those who can kill the body, and after that they have no more that they can do. I'll tell you who to fear. Fear Him who can cast body and soul into hell. But you've made your peace with Him, and you dwell on who He is, and you'll be thinking, well, all they can do is kill me. And what happens? I get to go to heaven. If God lets them have their way, so what? I won't have to wait anymore for the good part. And once the flesh is gone, these people can do nothing else. Don't fear people who can only kill you. You have a God who determines when that'll happen anyway. And He knows what He's doing. Say what David said, "But You, O Lord, are a shield about me, my glory, and the one who lifts up my head." Got problems? Run to God in prayer and then recount His greatness. But then there's a third step. Recount God's blessings to you. To you. If you're a believer, God has blessed you in such a tremendous fashion already. He's already proven Himself faithful to you in the most pointed of ways. He has sent His Son to pay the price for your sin. He has suffered on your behalf to satisfy the righteous wrath of God. He has overcome sin in you. Jesus Christ has paid the price. If you're a Christian, He has redeemed your soul. If you have believed the gospel, then in Christ God has granted you eternal blessings in Him. He's cared for you in your most incredible need. In your ultimate need, God stepped forward and met that need. Did He not? Is anything in this life of any consequence compared to the condemnation you faced in eternity before God overrode your destiny with His grace? There's no comparison. There's nothing that is anything like what we faced in eternity. There is no problem, no pain, no anguish in this world that even gets on the radar screen compared to the eternal condemnation of those who don't know God. That was your problem. And if you're a Christian, God stepped in to your life and overwhelmed your problem with His grace. So now you tell me, if He'll do that for you, is He going to withhold some small blessing? You think about how He's blessed you. You say, well, it's hard. I'm facing trouble. David's facing death. There's going to be a fight. What if God lets you die in the fight? What happens? Psalm 116:15 says, "Precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his godly ones." It's going to unite you with him. That's why it's precious to him. It'll only happen in his timing. Nobody, no thing is going to override that. And when it happens, you're going to be with him. And that's a precious thing to our God. He's going to bring you home. And for everyone who goes before the second coming, this is how you go. This is how you get into his presence. And he says it's a precious thing. And in the meantime, he cares for you every day. When you have troubles, it will help if you recount God's blessings to you. And this is what David does next. Look at verse 4. He switches to the past tense in verse 4. He's not now talking about the current problem while he's running. He's talking about the rest of his life before the problem. He says, "I was crying to the Lord with my voice, and he answered me from his holy mountain. I lay down and slept. I awoke, for the Lord sustains me." Who takes care of you when you're helpless? You're no more helpless than when you're asleep. And David had seen many battles before the one that was brewing here. He had run for his life many more times, and you have to sleep. Eventually, you have to sleep. And this is how he handled it before. "I cried out to the Lord, and he answered me. And I lay down and slept, and I woke up. They didn't kill me while I was asleep." God takes care of you. You cry out to him in your need, and he answers. It's not always the answer you were looking for, but it's always a loving answer that is for your best. And when you're helpless, it's God himself who's taking care of you. And you wake up again. Don't dwell on your trouble. Dwell on this God who loves his children and cares for them. And if you're his, he cares for you. Don't spend your time wondering what's going to happen if this goes this way or that doesn't work out or if something happens. Spend your time thinking of the God who doesn't just know the future, but who controls the future and who has promised that all things work together for the good of those who love him and are called according to his purpose. Well, you run to him in prayer. You recount his character. And you recount his blessings to you. And then the fourth step, you resolve to be confident in him. Now, these are steps. You can't do the American thing and skip to the fourth one and start there. It won't work. These are steps. But if you've done those three, you make up your mind that you're going to trust him. Look at verses 6 through 8. "I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people who have set themselves against me round about. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God. For you have smitten all my enemies on the cheek. You have shattered the teeth of the wicked. Salvation belongs to the Lord. Your blessing be upon your people." Now you think about the words of verse 6. "I will not be afraid." And he gives an imaginary scenario, the very kind of thing that makes us worry. What if there were 10,000 people in the army against us and they've got us surrounded? That's what it says. "I'm not going to be afraid of 10,000s of people who set themselves against me round about. I'm not afraid. I will not be afraid. I have a God who can be trusted." Now, you cannot do this until you belong to Him. And you cannot do this until you have dwelled on His greatness and contemplated His goodness to you. You will not be able to convince yourself unless you've done that. If you start with this step, you are doomed to fail. You must have something in the arsenal. You've got to have real information to overwhelm those doubts and fears that make you worry. If you don't know that God is great and powerful, if you don't remember that He can be trusted, if you have forgotten His goodness to you, then you are not going to succeed when you try to resolve not to be afraid. You'll be unconvinced. But when you've been honest with God about your fears in prayer, and when you've spent some time, a long time, thinking about how great He is, and when you've spent a long time thinking about how many times He sustained you in the past and of what He did for you on that cross, then you can resolve it, and it'll work. I will not be afraid. I will rest in this God who can handle it. Your doubts will melt away in the light of His glory. Your fears will flee at the power of His might. And you'll do like David does. You'll mock the circumstances rather than fear them. Oh, you think this is bad? I won't be afraid if you get me surrounded with 10,000s of people. You think you got me surrounded? My God's got you surrounded. And He can handle this. I'm not afraid. I'm not going to be afraid. He will do with your army as He pleases. And He will do with me as He pleases. And if He lets you have me, all you can do is send me to Him. And I don't mind going. This is the secret to being at peace, to being free from worry. It's not easy. It's not a quick fix. But it works. You cannot fix your attention on yourself and ever have victory. You cannot look to other people to fix it for you and ever have victory. You cannot hope for your circumstances to get better. You will never have victory. You have to put your hope in God. You can be free from sinful worry. You run to God with what's bothering you. You remember His greatness. You remember His kindness to you. And then you resolve not to be afraid. Now, if you don't belong to the Lord, none of this will work for you, and you should be afraid. Just be really blunt. If you don't know this great God, then you are His enemy, and you should be afraid. For the unbeliever, the problems of this world are nothing in comparison to the terrors that await in eternity. If you don't know this Lord, your only hope is to cry out to Him while there's time, and that means in this life. You still need to run to Him, but you run to Him with your eternal need, not with all the little stuff in this life. You ask Him to have mercy on your soul because you have offended Him by your rebellion. You ask Him to apply the blood of Jesus Christ to your sin so that you can be free and worship Him in spirit and in truth. And I invite you, if you don't know Him, to go to Him in prayer and do that very thing. You don't need to go to people. You need to go to God. He's the only one who can fix it. Admit your rebellion. Admit the sinfulness of your heart. Turn away from those thoughts. Forsake them. And ask Him to save you from the coming condemnation. And if you do that, God will not turn you away. He will never forsake anyone who will come that way to Him. You take that ultimate trouble that so many in this room have been freed from already, and you cry out to God, "Oh God, you see my trouble, help me." And He will save you from that eternal condemnation that awaits. Go to Him in prayer and ask Him. Let's bow together, please.